Twice. Got it.
Thank you. Proverbs 14:4. Now, I want to be careful and frame this in context here. We're talking about relationships, but don't read too much into this verse now. Okay, not yet. Somebody read Proverbs 14:4 for us. I appreciated the chuckle as you began that verse. Thank you, Buck. Yeah, where no oxen are, the manger's clean. Look, the reality is we're talking about relationships. Life would be much simpler if you were single, right? Like, I was laughing. Every time I look at my shower, I laugh because I have a shampoo and a soap. And then there's, like, Rite Aid, you know? And I don't understand it. I mean, there's a non-sulfate, you know, shampoo for once she gets her hair colored. And then there's a conditioner, but there's not just one. There's like three different. And there's several different shampoos. Because apparently, if you use the same shampoo, it begins to lose its impact. So you got to like rotate, you know? I'm thinking my hair is like an inch long. I don't have that problem, right? My life would be simpler single. However, there's a benefit when we're together. There's a benefit. Much increase comes, it says, by the strength of an ox. Look, if you want increase in your life, it's going to come at a cost. Same in business. You say, look, if I had that forklift, I could be more productive. But that forklift comes at a cost. It comes with maintenance. It comes with risk. But if you have it, you have much increase that comes from it. Same concept in a relationship. The principle I want to begin with is this. You can't get into a relationship, expect to give nothing, get everything, and have it be of increase. If that's your mentality, stay single. If your mentality is that in a relationship, you'll get and not give, do everyone a favor, stay single. If you're a married guy here, and your relationship or mentality in your relationship with that spouse of yours is to get and not give, I say, gentlemen, we need to have a woodshed talk, because that's not what a relationship is. Relationships are about giving. Much increase comes by the strength of an ox. It comes, my point is, at a cost. And you've got to put into your marriage, you've got to put into your relationship if you expect to get out of it. That makes sense? And if you're going to have a good one, it's going to come at work, okay? It's going to come at a cost. Look at now Song of Solomon. Let's take a peek here. We wrapped up last week. I think we finished with the dating concept, which again, just a reminder for those who maybe weren't here. You know, some of you have been married for many, many years, and the idea of talking about dating, you're like, look, too little, too late, right? You missed me by a while. But there's going to be some young guy, or even for you ladies, some young gal who's going to need some advice. And I want you to be able to turn to the book and show them what the book says about this issue that's so big for so many. But we finished relationships, if I remember, last week. And I was talking about the concept that this couple, as they spent time together, spent time in groups, and they spent time in public. And we see that this relationship began to get heated. In fact, if you remember, she says it here in verse 7, she says, I want to spend time with you, but I won't compromise my character in chapter 1. Chapter 2, they begin to spend time together. And in verse 6, she says, sustain me with raisin cakes, refresh me with apples because I'm lovesick. May his left hand be under my head and his right hand embrace me. And we made the observation that this relationship is enticing, that she is beginning to respond to this guy's leadership. And we asked the question, are those feelings okay? We said the feelings are okay, but the context isn't right. So he says, don't arouse or awaken love until it pleases. Notice in verse 7, you'll see that repeated again. The concept I mentioned last week is, men, we have got to lead. We've got to. And it doesn't change once you're married. It's not that we have to lead in a dating relationship and then get married and become oafs. Like, it's a woman's greatest fear that somehow she's going to marry you. And in a dating context, you're creative and spontaneous and fun and romantic, and then you get married and turn into Homer Simpson. That's a woman's greatest fear. And this guy steps up in a dating context and says, good feelings, but not yet. Couple things, by the way, about premarital intimacy, because we're living in a culture that is changing in that regard. I mean, I can't tell you how many couples would like somebody here at the Well to do their wedding, but they're living together and they're sleeping together. Sam, how many weddings are you trying to do for people, but we can't because of those things?
A lot.
More than you've seen?
Yes.
How long you been in ministry?
Since 83.
How many of you were not even born in 83? I'm not doing it to shame you. I'm not doing it to shame you. I'm doing it to make a point. Times are changing, and it ain't always good. Look, I love an iPhone. I love technology. I love the internet. I think that's fantastic. We didn't have the internet until I was in college. I remember having a dial-up internet. You remember those? And then you go to a website, click, and wait. You know? Times are changing. Now, technology, that's great. The way we communicate, that's great. Morality, not so great. And so what's happening is we're crossing all kinds of moral boundaries. And I made the observation that relationships have three aspects to it. Emotional aspect, a spiritual aspect, and a physical aspect. And they're connected like links in a chain. So we have to be cautious in a dating context not to move too close to intimacy, because the physical will follow. Which is why I make the point, and this is my opinion, just so take it for what it's worth, that I'm not a huge fan of dating or engaged couples reading their Bibles together, praying together, going through a Bible study together, for a couple of reasons. One is it makes it more intimate. I mean, is there anything more intimate than your prayer life with the Lord? I mean, that is way intimate. The other is this. You need to know if that person will grow without you. And I would guarantee you, ladies, if you said to that guy, hey, I think we should go to a Bible study together. You know what he's going to say? Okay, yeah, totally. And then you're going to have to ask again, and you're going to have to ask again, and you're going to have to ask again. And at some point, you're going to wish he asked you, but he's not going to ask you because you're initiating. See if he'll grow without you. All right. The other thing, the other problem I have with this premarital intimacy thing is that it atrophies communication. There's three issues with it. It atrophies communication. Think about it. If I'm in a relationship and the relationship in a dating or engaged context is beginning to go south and physical intimacy is introduced, what is it perceived to do to the relationship? Brings it right back together. Okay, so it atrophies communication. We don't have to learn how to fight. We just need to learn how to make out. And so if we could just make out, then everything feels right. By the way, it's the same thing in a marriage. If you enter into a marriage and every time you fight, it's all about the physical, you'll never learn to conflict well, which we'll talk about maybe here today. We've got to learn how to communicate. So it atrophies communication. Second is it gives a relationship an illusion of health. An illusion of health. It feels intoxicating. It feels exciting and it feels healthy. But all you've done is masked the issue. You've just covered it. You've given it an illusion of health, but it's not as healthy as you thought it was. And finally, with that, of course, it's the law of diminishing return. Most relationships physically, once you open that Pandora's box, it's more. And then a little more. And then a little more. And it's not always in a devious way. That's just the reality of it. I remember holding in fourth grade at Dry Creek Elementary, Lori Williams' hand. And it was as if 1,000 volts of awesome just shocked through my body. Do you remember those moments? By the way, my hand was so sweaty and I really wanted to wipe it off because it was so sweaty. I was so nervous, but I just knew if I let go, she'd never let me hold it again. So she just had to take it, right? But you know what's funny? The next time Lori and I held hands wasn't as awesome. And the next time it wasn't as awesome. And the next time it wasn't as awesome. That's the law of diminishing return. And it happens in a dating relationship. People who are saying, by the way, that you need to live together, try it out, make sure the sex is good, because what if it's bad? Completely miss the point. If I never have sex with anyone other than my wife, it'll be the best sex I've ever had all my life. That's the point. But the problem is, because we're giving ourselves away to everybody else, by the time we get married, you are emotionally and oftentimes physically married and divorced multiple times before you ever put on that tux or before you ever wear the white dress. And that has to stop. It has to stop. Okay? Let's watch this couple now. 2-8, it shifts. Let's watch this couple begin to move towards courtship. Before we get into the text, do any of you guys who've earned the gray hair, did any of you court? Was that the way you spent time with people? I have no idea. Did any of you court, any of you guys? Because it seems to be an older concept, and I'm wondering, is it this generation, your generation, or the one before? Because I remember hearing about this concept of courtship. The frustration I have with courtship in our culture today is all of this is dating with a spiritual title. So guys who are godly will say, supposedly godly, will say, oh no, I'm going to court her. But really, it doesn't look any different than the same kind of junior high stuff that happens, you know, back at Kasner. So I want to talk a little bit about courtship because I think it's different than anything we've seen. Somebody read there in verses 8 and following. Watch how this relationship now begins to take flight.
The voice of my beloved, behold, he comes, leaping over the mountains, bounding over the hills. My beloved is like a gazelle or a young stag. Behold, there he stands behind our wall, gazing through the windows, looking through the lattice. My beloved speaks and says to me, arise, my love, my beautiful one, and come away. For behold, the winter is past, the rain is over and gone. The flowers appear on the earth, the time of singing has come, and the voice of the turtle dove is heard in our land. The fig tree ripens its figs, and the vines are in blossom. They give forth fragrance. Arise, my love, my beautiful one, and come away.
Now, you need to look rather at verses 8 and 9 and recognize that if you try that today, you'll probably get arrested. So I wouldn't be peering through the lattice, you know, peeping through her window. It's not necessarily the way to make things happen. But the point is simply this. She is in anticipation now of her man who's coming to spend time with her. She is so excited. She's waiting for him, watching for him. Why? Because in verses 10 all the way through 13, what time of year is it in this relationship? What season is it? Yeah, spring. How do we know? It's life-giving. I mean, I'm reading through this verse right now laughing because my vines are in blossom. My fig tree is ripening its figs. And everything's coming now. Everything's pushing. Everything's growing. Everything's giving life. You can walk in my backyard and it smells of citrus blossoms and peach blossoms and cherry blossoms. Everything is fantastic and life-giving. That's what a good relationship is. Just a side note on that, it seems like a simple observation, but if your relationship is like hanging around with somebody who's got the plague, what are you doing? If you fight all the time, what are you doing? If you find yourself when you're around that person, it's like, oh man, what are you doing? Get out. Get out. This relationship brings joy. It brings life and it brings refreshment. Now, as they're going to spend time together, one of the things I want you to notice is that there's initiative on his part, and this relationship is going to go to the next level primarily because he steps up to lead. We talked about this as we began our time here about a year ago, but that one of the problems we have is that men are having a hard time leading. And I don't say this to shame you fellas. I say this together to lift each other up and say, what if instead of looking at each other and saying, well, it is what it is, and well, I mean, we're just dudes, right? We're idiots. We're relational morons. That's just kind of what we are. What if we said, no, that's who we used to be, but we're godly men. And if anyone's in Christ, he's a new creation. Old things have passed away. New things have come. So that's not like us. Let's lift each other up and let's be men who lead. Men whose wives walk into the company of others and the banner over them is love. Women who are in our life that when they see us, they feel joy, not regret. They feel delight, not smothered. Okay, let's be those kind of guys. This relationship's going to begin now to deepen a little bit. And it should bring life. And watch what happens now. As the relationship starts to deepen, there's an inevitable reaction from this woman. Look in verse 14. One of you fellas read that there, will you?
Oh, my dove, in the clefts of the rock, in the secret place of the steep pathway, let me see your form. Let me hear your voice, for your voice is sweet and your form is lovely.
Where is she at this point? What's it look like in that verse? Yeah, it seems like she's tucked away somewhere in some sort of cave, or my Bible says clefts of the rock. I mean, does any of your Bibles have a different translation than clefts of the rock? She's tucked away in some cave. It seems like she's hiding. I go, okay, wait a second. I thought this relationship was a life-giving thing. Why on earth is she hiding? She's not hiding out of fear,
watching.
Per se.
Watching.
Maybe watching. She's going to begin to observe something, and we're going to see the response in verse 16, which we'll get to in a minute. I don't think she's hiding out of fear as in terror. I think she's hiding out of fear as in vulnerable. Remember, I said on a scale of 0 to 10, fellas, if you're liking this girl and you're at like a 6, she's already looking at dresses, right? And so, ladies, you've got to be careful and keep that thing ratcheted back. But, guys, you also need to recognize that's the reality. Now, be careful, fellas, because on a bad day, we know that and we manipulate like that. So in a dating or courtship context, we'll start saying things like, no, I really think this relationship has potential, and I'm just really excited to see what the Lord is doing with us. And, you know, I've always wanted to marry a woman like you, and you've got the kind of qualities that I would love to have in a wife. And you start dropping heroin like that to a woman, and she'll lose her mind. Don't use that language. It's not healthy until the time is right. Look, if you're ready to post up, then post up. Don't talk about posting up. Post up. If you're not ready to post up, shut up. Is that clear? Because what happens, fellas, is you'll start dropping that language, and she's in my office now, a wreck, because she's being emotionally manipulated by you. Now, you don't mean to. You think you might like her. But tomorrow, you might think you like someone else. And she can't handle that kind of here and there. So, if this is the one, and you date, okay, casual, non-emotional, non-physical, non-escalating date, fine. You want to take her to dinner again? Okay. You want to take her to dinner a third time? She and every one of her Facebook friends is asking the question, what's up with you and so-and-so? If she's asking the question, you're not leading. If she's asking it and has no answer, you're not leading. She ought to know at every step where you stand. And that's where men go passive. In a dating relationship, we try to make it as ambiguous as possible so we can get all of the benefit with none of the responsibility. Those days need to die. And we need to step up as men and begin to lead. So that when people go, hey, what's up with you and so? She says, well, this is what he said. So this is where we are. She doesn't need to stalk your Instagram. She doesn't need to follow a Twitter feed. She doesn't need to interview your friends. When people say, what's up with you and so? She says, this is where he told me we were. So that's where we are. That's leadership. Now, this relationship is beginning to grow, but she's hiding. She's hiding, in my opinion, again, out of vulnerability, because she's wondering, is this guy who he says he is? Because right now, she's thinking, this might be the guy. And I've waited all my life for a guy like this. Because so far, how has he treated her? He's been kind. He's talked sweetly to her. His reputation is godly. He's never laid a hand on her. He's not manipulated her. He's just been nothing but life-giving, to the point where she was insecure in chapter 1 about how she looked. But in chapter 2, she says, I'm the rose of Sharon, the lily of the valley. She says, I am beautiful because of him. This man's treatment in my life has just lifted me up. And she's going, uh-oh. Not only that, but what did she do in chapter 2, verses 5 and 6? You think she's a little embarrassed about that? She just came on to him big time. Big time. This is like Potiphar's wife and Joseph big time. Like, come here, let's go for it thing. And he very gently dealt with her. And she's thinking, I can't believe I did that. That's not like me at all. What am I doing? So she is realizing she's in a very vulnerable place. Look at what she, or the comment made in verse 15. This is fascinating. I think it's a question. Are you willing to? And look at verse 15 there. Will one of you ladies read verse 15 for us?
Pitch the foxes for us, the little foxes that spoil the vineyard, for our vineyards are in blossom.
Jerry or Pete or one of you guys who do vines, what happens if you have, while the blossoms are blooming, what happens if some sort of, I don't know, critter, vermin, call it whatever you want, comes in and messes with those things?
You'll lose the blossoms and therefore lose the subsequent crop that should be there.
So the assumption then is if I've got a fox in my vineyard and it's nibbling on some of the blossoms, it's probably not going to get all of them, but it's going to get some. So the assumption then is it's probably not going to produce the yield that it would have produced before. Is that a fair assessment?
That's exactly what I was going
to
say.
We're in this together, my friend. I think that point is fascinating because what she's saying is, will you catch the foxes for us? The little foxes that would ruin the vineyard while our vineyards are in blossom? What do you think she's asking? What do you really think she wants to know? I mean, what do you think? No right or wrong here. Get out there. What do you think?
Commitment.
Say it again?
Commitment.
Yeah, are you willing to commit? Yeah.
Protect us.
Say what?
You're going to protect us.
Yeah, are you going to protect us? Maybe from what? Let me ask another question, a follow-up. Protect us from what? Because I think you're right.
Other women.
Maybe other women?
Is it like the little things in a relationship that will eventually kind of get bigger?
Good. I think so. The little things, she says, that may become big things?
She wants a mean coat.
What's that?
She wants a mean coat.
Maybe not that. Maybe not that. I see where you're going with that, but maybe not. What are the issues that come into a relationship? Yeah, I mean, we could sit, honestly, we could probably sit here till Jesus comes and talk about what those little foxes could be. And I think what she's asking is, are you willing to work on this relationship? Have you ever tried to catch a fox? I mean, I've never tried, but I can't imagine, unless you're Samson, I can't imagine that it's easy to catch a fox. But you know what? I don't know about your relationship, but my marriage has all kinds of potential issues. And I got to work hard to make sure that I keep our marriage protected from anything. Fill in the blanks. Whether it's my mind, my attention to her, my tone, whether it's my facial expression, whether it's a glowing face looking at, you know, whatever, you know, right? Trying to get high score on Clash of Clans or whatever, right? We got to protect our relationships. And she's just asking, look, I'm vulnerable here. Are you really going to do what you say you're going to do? And she's nervous. And I think that was a fantastic ringtone, by the way. And I think that's a very fair question. Now, we don't know how he answers it. The answer is not recorded for us. But we do know in verse 16, however he answers, she likes it. Look at verse 16 there. It says, my beloved is mine and I am his. He pastures his flock among the lilies until the cool of the day when the shadows flee away. Turn, my beloved, and be like a gazelle or a young stag on the mountains of Bether. Now, do any of your Bibles have a different translation than Bether?
Mine says Cleft Mountains.
Cleft Mountains. You have an ESV?
Yeah.
What's yours say? Same thing?
Rugged Hills.
Rugged Hills. You can look on maps all you want. You're not going to find the mountains of Bether. They don't exist. The word Bethar in Hebrew means to cut. Same word used, by the way, in Genesis 15 to cut a covenant. It was a Bethar. So it means a cut. It's an opening. Thus they get the name Cleft Mountains. Some translate it Mountains of Perfumes, which I thought was fascinating because she mentions earlier that her beloved is to her like a pouch of myrrh which lies all night between her breasts. I'm not trying to read into the text. I'm just telling you these mountains don't exist, and the Hebrew word means twin peaks. So you can figure out what you think it means, but it doesn't mean a mountain you can go hike in Israel. What she says is, however he responds to this question or inquiry, are you willing to work on a relationship? She says, my beloved is mine and I am his. Do you notice the total, like, he's mine, I'm his? Which, by the way, I have a ring that I wear as a wedding band. It says, my beloved is mine and I am his. So that's kind of engraved on my ring as a reminder of what a relationship is supposed to be. This woman now is responding in a profound way until the cool of the day when the shadows flee away. What does it mean for a shadow to flee away? When the sun comes up and, where's it coming up? There. And it strikes a shadow on this building. So the shadow's going that way. As the sun rises, the shadow does what? Flees away. So the concept is all night long until the morning, be like a gazelle or a young stag on the mountains of Bether. She's saying, in a sense, calling to him to be with her physically all night long. And then in verses 1 of chapter 3, all the way through to chapter 4, it's what seems to be a dream sequence. There's two in the book, and she says, on my bed night after night, I sought him, I didn't find him. I must arise, we must go to the city, to the streets, to the squares. I must seek him whom my soul loves. I sought him, I didn't find him. The watchman who made the rounds of the city says, I said, have you seen him whom my soul loves? Scarcely had I left them when I found him whom my soul loved. I held on to him. I would not let him go until I had brought him to my mother's house, into the room of her who conceived me. Why would you bring a boy to your mom's bedroom? Why would you bring a boy to your parents' house? I mean, how many of you are married? Any of you married? What was that like the first time your parents met this boy? So I'm putting you on the spot. You're welcome.
They had already heard a lot about him.
Were you nervous about that?
Maybe a little bit, but I feel like I talked with them about it a lot, and so they were prepared for whatever would come, but it went well.
Ladies, let me ask you a general question to all of you. If you just meet some guy, are you going to bring him to your parents' house? No. Why would you bring him to your parents' house? Mom, Dad, this is Billy. Billy, Mom, Dad. I mean, you're wanting this, right? Not only that, but it says she brings him into the room of her who conceived her. That's as intimate as you go. You come. My daughter's come over to my house with a boy in a decade? Okay. But you come over and you try to go into mama's bedroom? Are you kidding me? I mean, that's meant to be very intimate. Now, I want you to notice, fellas, in chapter 2, verse 7, and in chapter 3, verse 5, when this woman now is responding to him, what does he say? I adjure you, O daughters of Jerusalem, by the gazelles and by the hinds of the field, that you do not arouse or awaken love until it pleases. Twice he steps up. Twice. Incidentally, most men, I won't have you raise your hands because it might be a little awkward in mixed company. Most men want this kind of response. Most men would love for the spouse in their life or the woman in their life to respond this way. Can I just be honest with you? It's a privilege. It's not a right. It's earned. It's not deserved. Does that make sense? It's earned. Why does she respond like this? Because she's a shady woman? No. She's responding to godly leadership. So, if you don't have this kind of response, maybe you ought to look at her and say, what's wrong with her? No, maybe you ought to look at you and say, what's wrong with me? This is a response to godly leadership. And it's earned. It's earned because this guy has spent time with her. He's cared for her. He's protected her. He's never defiled her. He's been sweet to her. Been romantic to her, but not in a manipulative way. And God has wired a woman to respond to godly servant leadership. And that's exactly what this guy does, is he lays it down. And as he lays it down for this woman, she just thrives, flourishes, blossoms, shines for the world to see. That's the way it ought to be. Look, fellas, it ain't about you. And where no oxen are, the manger's clean. If you think it's about you, stay single. But much increase comes by the strength of a beautiful ox called a wife who will add value to your life as you lift her up. Does that make sense? A couple things on courtship quickly, and then we'll see if we can move into some other things. As this couple begins to spend time together, I want you to notice, and this is not necessarily from the text. Now, this is Brad. Take it for what it's worth. I want to show you just quickly a couple stages of courtship. First things first. I think, men, we need to lead. And so I'm challenging you fellas. How many of you are single guys here? All right. And married guys, write these down too, because when some young stud comes to you and asks for some advice, this might really help him. First things first. Fellas, you need to declare your intentions to pursue a friendship. Post up. Go to her. Hey, look, I think you're great. I'd like to get to know you better in groups and whatnot. I'd like to just see if we can continue to have fun together. With all of our friends, but I just want you to notice, I notice you, and I want to make sure that's okay with you. Now, the courtship process needs to go like this. You initiate, all she has to do is nod. You guys ever watch baseball? Any baseball fans? A pitcher, right?
Pitcher looks at that catcher, and that catcher gives a signal, and he shakes him off. Catcher gives another one, shakes him off. When the catcher, or the pitcher rather, sees what he likes, he just throws it. He saw what he liked, and he said, that's fine. All you women ought to have to do is be a pitcher. And he gives you a signal. You can shake him off. Thanks, but no thanks. But he gives you a signal, and you go, I like that. And that's it. Look, so often, our insecurity comes out, fellas, and we're like, hey, Clarice, I think you're fantastic, and I really like you. Do you like me? I mean, what do you think about me? Are we okay? Can we spend time? You know, it's so needy. Go stop. Just say, this is where I'm at. I'd like to spend time with you and continue to enjoy a friendship. Is that okay with you? And ladies, all you got to do is go, I'm good with that. You can say more if you want, but you don't have to. You can go, yeah, I'm cool with that. Then it goes to the next step, which is a declaration for exclusivity. It's all fun and games to spend time in groups and time with all your homies, and you're all going to movies and whatnot together. That's great. But at some point, the two of you are going to be one-on-one. And when the two of you are one-on-one, you better say it. You better say it. Hey, I'd like to see if we can take this relationship and get to know each other one-on-one. I mean, remember now, he said multiple times, you're the mare among the chariots of Pharaoh, like a lily among the thorns is my beloved among the maidens. So there's a sense of all of them, she stands out. As soon as he spends time with her exclusively, you got to say something. And at that point, my opinion, you got to talk to some authority in her life and talk to authority in your life. I went to our college pastor when I was in Texas, and I said, hey, his name is John. I said, John, I'd like to spend time with Z. I remember my wife's maiden name was Gibran, so everybody called her Z. I said, I'd like to spend time with Z one-on-one. Are you okay with that? And he says, well, you can get in line. He said, because there's like a dozen guys that have had the same talk with me. I said, well, I'm going to give it a shot anyway. And I want to see if that's okay. Is there anything in her life that you see that would disqualify her, or anything in my life that you see? And I'd like to invite you into this relationship. So we're going to date in a fishbowl. We're going to spend time together for God and everyone to see. You have freedom to ask anything you want at all times. And so I asked authority. And it was not wasting Jen's time. Now, I didn't say, hey, you might be the one I want to marry. I just said, hey, I'd like to see what God might do with this relationship. Are you okay with that? She said, I'm okay with that. And so we began to progress. At that point, by the way, we laid out physical standards, because I wasn't going to compromise. I don't know about, you know, you guys, but my relational past was not necessarily the best. It was not the most robust and healthy relational past. Baxter's laughing because he was the advisor for the fraternity before I came to know the Lord. So if you want dirt on Brad Bell, that's the guy you need to ask. But he's sworn a vow of silence. Isn't that right, Baxter? So at some point you say, look, if you don't like the way things are going, change the way you do things. But if you always do what you've always done, you'll always be what you've always been. And so thanks be to God, I'm not that guy anymore. I don't do it that way anymore. So I said, I'm going to do it different. And so I remember praying about that, going, okay, Lord, what should I do here? And I'm praying, going, Lord, there's this girl, Z, as you know, she's fantastic. I like her. I'd like to spend time with her. What about the physical stuff? Because I'm attracted to her. You know, and I could see, I could see very easily one thing leading to another, and I'll end up in compromise again. And I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that to you. I don't want to do that to her. I respect myself more than I ever did. I don't want to do that to me. And I remember just feeling impressed on my heart, and I don't know how else to describe it. Some people say God told me. I have no idea what that looks like, because God's never told me anything, right? Other than I just felt very impressed on my heart that I shouldn't kiss her. And I thought, what? Man, you're crazy. Pray again. Pray again. And I felt very strongly that I shouldn't. And it wasn't because I was godly. I want you to hear that. It's because I was honest. Do you know what I mean by that? It wasn't like the pious thing to do is to not kiss. It was that the honest thing to do is recognize there's no off switch. It's like an alcoholic. Can an alcoholic have a beer? No. Why? Because there's no off switch. So how does an alcoholic stay sober? By drinking nothing. Okay? Because if you never start it, you never have to stop it. So I felt like I shouldn't start it. Long story short, thankfully, as she prayed about it, she felt the same way. And that was like, whew, because if she didn't, I don't know what I would have done. I'd have been in trouble. But thankfully, we're on the same page. Third step,
is there's got to be a discovery process in your relationship. You got to know what you're getting into. I'll give you a quick contrast. There was a gal I dated for a while when I came to know the Lord, and I said, hey, look, the relationship was heading that way. I mean, I had money set aside. Her mom took me ring shopping. You know, it was a little, I felt a little pressured by it, but hey. And anyway, I said to this girl, I said, look, you need to know, here's my past. Here's kind of where I've been. Not details, but enough that she got the picture. She starts crying. And I'm thinking, oh, we're going to have one of those moments. You know, we're going to connect and she's going to show grace. Oh, no. She says, I can't believe God would keep me pure all my life and I would fall in love with a man like you. I kid you not, I'm on the floor weeping. I mean, wrecked. I've never been more humiliated in my life. Wrecked. Contrast. I bring Jen out to California. This is, of course, years later. And we're walking at Clovis West High School because I'm showing her around. This is my hometown. This is where I went to school. All the while, sweaty palms, nervous because I got to have this conversation with her. And I remember we're right there by the pool in between the tennis courts and the locker room at Clovis West. If you know Clovis West, you know exactly where I'm at. And I go, hey, I just need to tell you, I mean, you need to know what you're getting into here. I haven't always walked with the Lord. I've made a lot of bad decisions. I came to Christ in college. And she stops me. She goes, I don't care who you were. She says, I know who you are now. And that's the man I trust. I was like, yes, yes. You need to have the conversation. Because different people are going to have different perspectives on what's appropriate and what's not in terms of where you've been. Some people say, absolutely not. If you've ever had alcohol, if you've ever looked at anything on the internet, if you've ever done anything with anyone else, you're out. Okay, great. If that's where they're at, you got to respect that. But you have to have the conversation. But details aren't necessarily helpful. Sometimes my wife is like, hey, I want to know about your relationship with so-and-so. Because she's laughing. She goes, like, everybody in Fresno is an ex-girlfriend for me. So anywhere we go, she got, who's that? She goes, you date her in high school? Yeah, I date her in high school. You know, it's one of those. And so she says, well, tell me about the relationship. I said, do you really want to know? Because I have nothing to hide. I'll tell you anything you want to know. But the question I want you to ask and answer before I share is, do you think it would be better for our marriage for you to know? If you think it'll better our marriage, then I'll tell you anything. But if not, let's not go there. And thankfully, she's never wanted me to go there. But you need to share in broad strokes. Finally, engagement. At that point, there's an engagement. Now, along the way, as you're leading out, fellas, as you're leading out, all she's got to do is nod. I'm cool with that. I'm cool with that. I'm cool with that. We drove to Oklahoma. I met with Gary and Clara, her mom and stepdad, and asked for their blessing. They said yes. She and I went for a walk, and I said, look, just so you know, I've asked for their blessing. They've said yes. And so the next communication you'll hear from me is an engagement. I've done the best I could to lead out early and often so you know exactly where I'm coming from. I just want to make sure you know that's what's coming next. I want to make sure you're okay with that. She just nodded. I said, okay. And we moved on. And that's the process. And if we'll lead out, I think we'll see some incredible response along the way. Disclaimer, by the way. I'd love to look in this room of single folks and say, look, all of you have been right before the Lord all your life, and nobody's crossed moral boundaries, and this is exactly the standard that you've carried all your life. But the reality is you're broken like I am. And thanks be to God, we have a Savior who came to seek and save the lost, and it's not how you start, it's how you finish. And the reality is some of you have boogered this up multiple times, but that's why Jesus came, not for the healthy, but the sick. And the gospel is redemptive. And if you find yourself covered in shame and guilt, recognize that shame and guilt are not from the Lord. Conviction is. Shame and guilt aren't. Shame and guilt says you are a loser. Conviction says that's not like you. And that's not like the Lord. Let's live up. And so I hope that by hearing this courtship concept, it helps you to live up. And challenges, especially you as men to lead and you as women to allow yourself to be pursued. Now, I recognize the frustration, by the way, as I'm talking to the gals, in that very few men are willing to step up and lead like this. And so it's frustrating because you've got weak men who won't step up. And so I would just say to you ladies, we're fighting the good fight to change that for you. But you ought not to have to put yourself out there. You should just be able to go, I'm cool with that. Now, if you want to say more, go ahead. But you shouldn't have to. You ought to be the treasure that's pursued. And men, we ought to be the ones that take the emotional risk. but we tend to hedge our bet. Like, I'll tell her I like her if I find out she likes me first. Grow up. Come on. Get out there. If she doesn't... Oh, by the way. Thank you. If she doesn't like you, don't be a stalker. I'm dead serious, because here's what happens. A guy goes, hey, I think you're great. I just... Can I spend time with you? And she goes, no. No, really, I think you're fantastic. Can I spend... She goes, no. No, really. I mean, I really want to be with you. Can we spend time together? She's like, no, no. I mean, at some point, it ain't right. All right? Look, if she shakes you off, walk away. Walk away. Because in that process of her saying no, she's telling you no. Be a man of God who has integrity enough to hear that no means no. And so walk away. Here's what you'll probably find if you walk away, is that her heart responds more to godly acceptance of rejection than desperation of hopeless pursuit. That makes sense? I could never say that again. I have no idea how that came out of my mouth, but y'all know what I'm talking about. So if she says no, just let it be no and pray. Because if that's the girl you really feel like you would like to be with, if there's something about her that you really, then pray and say, Lord, I really like this girl. Would you either change her heart or show me someone who's like that girl? And that may be exactly what the Lord does. Okay? Let me wrap up by praying for us and give you a kind of a challenge. Next week, by the way, for the married guys who have just endured, just hung on and just clung to attraction, dating, and courtship, next week is conflict honeymoon night. By the way, the couple's going to have sex in chapter 4. It's pornographic. I mean, it's the most graphic thing you're going to read anywhere. It's like 50 Shades of Grey before that was cool, okay? Only it's one man and one woman and they're married, so maybe it's not the same. But immediately following the honeymoon night, they fight. I think that's brilliant. Immediately after, intimacy, total consuming intimacy, they squab. And I think that's great because that's life. And that's what marriage is. It's not about, by the way, not fighting. If you're in a relationship and you never conflict, I would call a timeout. Somebody's not being honest. Conflict is inevitable. But there's a way to conflict in health, and there's a way to conflict in unhealth. We'll show you that next week. Before we leave, though, just out of curiosity, are any of you guys over 40 heading to go to breakfast right now? Any of you guys over 40 got time to go to breakfast? Okay? Sam does. Jerry does. Okay, here we go. Are any of you guys under 40 hungry? Can you go meet with these guys and get some time with them? One of the benefits of doing this is that we get to connect a little bit as men, which we don't get to. We got guys from different campuses. We got guys from different services. We got guys from different churches who might be here today. That's great. I want to make sure that we're providing ample time and opportunity for guys to connect. So if you have the means to do it, great. Guys over 40, if you're with a college student, recognize that he's probably college poor. Just buy him a big old manhole cheap pancake. Let him shove it in his face. He'll be delighted. You don't have to buy him an omelet, all right? He doesn't need that. And so if you've got time to do that, that would be fantastic. Fair enough? All right. Yep.
I wanted to add on to that in case any of you guys are Facebook junkies. I'm very involved in Facebook, but there is a Facebook group created called Early Tuesday Men. So anybody wants to join that group, feel free. Gives us more of a chance to connect on different levels and discuss and just get to know each other.
Thank you.
So it's Early Tuesday Men.
All right. Hey, Danny Herwell, will you pray for us, my friend? Do you mind?
Their minds and hearts, change the way they do relationships.